Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm trying to think of these creative intros, but Montana has it down. He's Montana Samuels. I'm Mike Bonner. This is The Bubble, and the NFL draft was last week. And yeah. As we do on The Bubble, we like to talk about current events or things that are taking place, but kind of shift it 180. You know, look at it, look at the magnifying glass at a different angle or something like that. And one of the big stories of the NFL draft was Ryan Shazier announcing the Pittsburgh Steelers pick, one of their picks.
Yep.
And it was this, on TV and through the NFL, a really emotional, inspirational story because Ryan Shazier was injured last year making a tackle and was carted off the field. And when you watch the video, it's pretty disturbing because his legs don't move after the hit. And I believe Sean McDonough, the play-by-play announcer for the game, says, "I haven't seen his legs move since he went down. He rolls over," and you could tell his upper body was rolling him over, "but his legs haven't moved." Mm-hmm. And then Shazier walked out on stage and announced the pick. And walk is a strong word.
With the assistance of like his wife or his fiance, I believe. It wasn't a natural walk that top allowed. Like you said yesterday, this man was in the 99th percentile of athleticism. He was one of the best linebackers in football, and he was like, if he would have walked out with some sort of walking assistance, I would not have been surprised in the like form of like a cane or a walker. That's like the type of walk,
right? Well, and I think that's it's, you know, it's this fine line because I don't know if how inspirational it was for the young players there, you know, that were watching. Right. Because certainly, yes, his determination, his desire to continue to heal, to continue to improve, to physical therapy, to show up, and that's certainly inspirational. Mm-hmm. However, I don't think, and a couple of stories, one was on Deadspin, and then
Patrick Redford wrote that on Deadspin.
And Tom Curran of NBC Sports Boston wrote, and he was the one who kind of pointed that out, was this was a human that last year was in the 99th percentile of athletes on the earth, just a physical freak athlete, and now he's having trouble walking across the stage, and it's really jarring in the sense of how dangerous the sport can be, and it's one I think the NFL tried to flip on its head saying, look at how awesome this is, but I don't think it should really be discounted or underplayed of how dangerous the sport can be. And I think Deadspin even went further and said one of the athletes that are drafted during this draft could, I'm going to say could because we really don't know, but I think they wrote that it will happen to one of these, you know, players because it's a very dangerous sport.
Yeah, well, and I think another important point to make, it's different than just the physical harm aspect, but so the NFL and the Steelers themselves were very, very secretive when it came to his progress with the injury. Deadspin wrote another article that was linked in the story we referenced earlier. They linked back to a story where it was like a week later and they hadn't said, there was no update on Ryan Shazier, whether or not he could walk, whether or not, like, what the injury was. So the NFL was so secretive about this because presumably because they knew it was damaging if this turned out to be something that was life threatening or like life altering. But then he's now making this recovery. He said he's on the football side of things where he wants to come back in 2019. So they're using it as this marketing tactic of like, look at the brotherhood and the strength of football. Like, we're such a tight knit community. We support our own. And it's like, well, no, this guy was like the best player on his team. Like, that's why people, he's like a human that people respected both on and off the field. That's why people are supporting him, not because he's a football player that's coming back from this brutal injury.
And I think we should kind of mention, too, this is the first of a couple episodes we'll be talking about kind of this issue of football. So you'll definitely want to not only listen to this one, but the next week's as well. And I think you're right. I think it's... it's a problem that I kind of see from football, and I've said on previous podcasts in different states and such that I'm not sure I would let my child play football. I'm not. Yeah. I right now, if I had to make a decision, I would say no, because I don't know if it's safe. I do think at this point, I've always kind of thought of the idea of, I'm trying to think of the ages. Well, I'll just, instead of grades, I'll just say ages. There should be no contact in football prior to varsity. Everything else should be kind of 7-on-7. Really, because when, especially when you look at Pee Wee and Pop Warner, they're all the same size anyways. Kids are, you know, right. So what's an offensive lineman to a running back to whatever? Show them the skilled positions in or techniques and such to learn those techniques, better understand the game. And then when they're 16, 17, 18 and such, they understand, hey, this is a really dangerous game.
Right.
If you want to play, hey, great. More power to you. You know that you're aware of the damages, so to speak. And I think this is something I believe that the state of California was, the legislator was.
I believe California
was,
yeah.
Yeah, was debating. I don't know what happened with that debate. But I think it's something that it certainly should be viewed as, hey, this is a dangerous sport, and how do we solve the future? Not, hey, look at the inspiration of this person that, you know, you can come back from anything. Certainly you can, but how about we create a game where this doesn't happen?
Right. Well, and I think, too, an aspect of that, to play devil's advocate a little bit, the NFL, you always hear people around the league or the league themselves talking about on-field product. And I think a big thing, the NFL is influential in a lot of these football decisions that happen down, like in the trickle-down world of football.
And I agree with you. Now, that's where I was just about to say, because it popped to my head, I wanted to remember this, that I have covered a number of NFL linemen who are now in the NFL who were not, you know, this five-star incredible talent, and they weren't necessarily even high school linemen because, or they didn't start in varsity because their bodies hadn't developed yet. So in terms of linemen, they are, I feel like, almost the most coachable, where you can just take, you know, guy with good footwork, good this, and then craft them into to a player where they're not playing at that level in high school anyways, where certainly some of the wide receivers, the skill positions, they're a little different, where you don't need to have linemen until high school, because really beyond, they're not preparing for anything. There's not like a lineman that, oh, in fifth grade I was, usually every lineman I talked to was like, yeah, I got moved there in high school, or I started playing in high school, or I was there early and then I moved around and then I specialized later.
Right.
There isn't this sense of, oh, well, he needs to play, develop his skills from 5 until 16. There are a host of linemen. The New England Patriots, Vollmer, he was a wrestler. You know, O'Connell, I think, O'Connell was a wrestler. I'm not sure if Vollmer was, but certainly, yeah, you don't need, where it'd be much more difficult to have a wide receiver just pop up and, oh, Usain Bolt's fast, let him put a wide receiver. Right, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Well, and I think that, to get, back to where I think the NFL would sort of try to halt that process would be the notion where it's like, well, there's a toughness element to football, and toughness is what people... I mean, it's like a different form of like a combat sport, basically. It's like if you did boxing, but you didn't... Well, no face punches. And I don't know what the different age groups in boxing are. Sorry to all my Golden Gloves people out there, but... I just feel like the NFL is one of these leagues where it seems like the common perception is, if it makes sense to the outside world, you can expect Roger Goodell and the higher-ups at the NFL to do the exact opposite.
Working with the Grammys.
We got the Grammys, we got the Oscars, and we got the NFL.
I think it's, I feel like the draft sometimes puts a spotlight on these issues, because... one, you have, as we mentioned, the Ryan Shazier action, or Ryan Shazier announcing the pick. And then you have the aspect of, you know, why isn't a running back high value at number two? Well, because they get hurt, because you can fill them in, because they're not going to have a longer career, because the wear and tear on them is much more in a college. They've carried the ball a lot, or you know, this running back has more wear and tear because he played at Wisconsin compared to it's really weird to talk to about another human in the sense of, well, they have, you know, the mileage on their bumps and bruises. They can only play for so long, whereas you're not thinking about that necessarily in baseball or basketball in the sense of, well, how many games have they played? How many hits have they taken?
Right, exactly. Yeah, in baseball, I guess it's like pitchers, you can think of that if you're like more inclined to the baseball world, but it is this really strange...
It's a good point.
It's this humans as commodity or product rather than human. I mean, the concept as a whole is sort of strange. And it does.
I mean, and sure, that's a lot in a lot of, you know, jobs. You know what I mean? How does your talent fit our, you know, if you're a puzzle piece, how does that work into our overall puzzle?
Sure.
But it's just weird in the sense of the NFL that for a running back, it's like, well, he has a lot of
It's just like, is he miles going to get
on? Hurt? Yeah, is he going to get hurt? And how long can he play without getting hurt? And therefore, the value is it's just a different, because in reality, a lot of other positions aren't like, quarterbacks aren't like that. Linemen aren't really like that. It's a really specific, now that's kind of come into the running backs, where it's, you're looking at them and they're a bad value because once they hit 30, it's which you're looking about an 8-year career, maybe.
And so the oddity of this too is, especially when you look at the framework of how the NFL has created their take, where football's not a dangerous game. It's just like, we're doing everything we can to make it even safer, but we don't view it as dangerous. But literally the reason most people around the league talk about running backs in this way is because they suspect that throughout their career they will be injured, and that's why they can no longer play football.
Yeah.
But it's not a dangerous game. It's sort of this the wool being pulled over the eyes. It's like smoke and mirrors almost. That's kind of what I find strange. But this brings us into the injury aspect, sort of guides us into our next point, which we want to talk about
today. Which you also see a lot in the NFL. Again, it's all these things are kind of highlighted by the NFL draft. It's really kind of interesting.
Yeah. But so that sort of brings us to our next point. Bleacher Report published, it was almost like a round table of NBA and NFL, former NBA and NFL players, talking about athletes who smoke weed and the different uses of it. Some recreational, a lot medical. There were different people. I believe it was Sean Smith and also Martellus Bennett that were quoted as saying over 80% of NFL players smoked weed. They suspected, or they estimated, Martellus Bennett, yeah. But it sort of brings us to this interesting notion, because we've heard all of these stories about the dangers of football and how no small part of those dangers are prescription drug addiction. I mean, you look at somebody like Brett Favre, who dealt with that in his post-career life. And then in the framework of the NFL draft, we have guys who have failed some drug tests. We have guys who have got caught smoking weed in college. And all of a sudden, this is a really, really big problem, despite the legality of the substance. And do we know the exact number? Is it 27 states? Am I accurate on that?
It's a good question.
That's a good question. But yeah, so I think it just brings
up... I believe there are only two states in the union that flat-out ban marijuana entirely, both medical and recreational. So I believe, because Montana and I are working on a marijuana story, so look out for that.
Yeah.
But in our research there, the person we spoke to said... that there are only two states in the United States that have outright banned it. So that kind of puts into perspective of basically 48 out of 50 say at some point it is useful.
Oh, I'm actually on a paragraph in the story that says it right here. Marijuana is now legalized for rec use in 9 states and counting, plus 29 for medicinal purposes.
Okay.
So there you go. But so, yeah, this always sort of stands out to me, because in the NFL draft, you always inevitably will have somebody who's got off-the-field issues that are not drug-related or specifically marijuana-related, and then you have people with off-the-field issues that are just simply marijuana-related. And the way those are talked about are really striking to me. The example we were discussing earlier was like Arden Key, which, I mean, Mike made a good point. It's not necessarily, a lot of times NFL executives just use that to sort of cover up some other things.
Because it's, some of it is, in the NFL drafts that I have covered, scouts have told me some things, and it's just personal. It's, they can say something that it's a drug issue. I covered a player one time where his stock was, scout didn't know exactly where he was going to go in the draft, and he said some of it was hurting because they thought that this player's dad was a drug dealer. So you can kind of say drug issues,
right,
without, you know, putting in the media or reporting that, you know, we think your dad's a drug dealer. It just looks, so there, oftentimes there are other reasons kind of happening that why a person is falls or not. I think in the story that we saw on NFL.com, an NFL scout, I think, said normally marijuana isn't, his quote here is, here's the line, generally speaking, marijuana use isn't much of a red flag for teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the other things that maybe not necessarily associated with that, but other things within the player's background, right, that kind of add up.
Well, and I think too, marijuana specifically, but drug, anytime you hear off the field issues under the notion of drug related issues, it comes with this stigma where automatically people feel a little like aghast, where they're like, oh, I don't know if I want to associate myself too closely with this person. And that was what I found so good about the round table, was it was this group of very high succeeding professional athletes who came together to talk about the fact that it was like, I believe it was, once again, I don't know if Sean Smith said this part, but one of the NFL players on the round table was talking about how on flights home after games on Sunday, in order to try to sleep on a plane, people would just be like, Ambien, 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 someone getting Ambien, whatever. And it's like, I don't necessarily want to be taking prescription drugs to help me sleep or to help me feel better on a Monday after a Sunday night game, mm-hmm, or something like that. And there are options like CBD oil and things like this where it's less impact on my body that's already being impacted by the fact that I'm playing a very physical and violent game. And I think a big part of that is sort of breaking a stigma and also just trying to change the notion of drug testing as a whole. Because I don't know if you feel this way, Mike, but have you felt that like certain players have been targeted by these drug tests as well? Almost as it's like, well, we don't want to test everyone really hard, but we have to act like we're doing something. So Josh Gordon, you fail 2 drug tests, you're getting drug tested every month now.
I have not felt that way. And I think I also want to caution, because I think, like, I just had a conversation with someone the other day whose place of business tests for marijuana, and right, it is illegal in the state of Massachusetts. It's legal,
right?
So I think it's a problem that the entire, I mean,
sure,
country has to deal with,
NFL,
because federally it's, right, still illegal,
right?
So I think that's something that has to be figured out at some point, because it's not going to work. It's not going to work.
Yeah, there's no clarity about what is. Yeah, it just seems like you don't test for alcohol. It's one of those things like that. That isn't interesting.
I do think at some point every business will get there, because it just will. Like you said, you don't test for alcohol, you don't test for cigarettes.
Right.
If marijuana is legal, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's about breaking down that sort,
but you
of
can't show up to the
with
job place drunk either.
No. And
so
I think, sure. And I don't necessarily think anyone, well, I don't know. There were people who in that round table that said they did play under the influence of, I'm not going to say under, that sounds kind of square. They got high before they went and played either basketball or football, which, yeah, once again, your opinion is on either side of that argument is valid. I'm not here to tell you how to think, but NFL draft time always kind of gets me really curious, because you have a lot of our colleagues in journalism being tasked with trying to keep in, yeah, that's a good word.
Peers.
Peers, yeah.
No, I think because I think what you're, and it's a really good point, and you kind of said is off the field is such a huge umbrella.
Right.
You know, it's a really wide engulfing thing where it could be is, yeah, it could be a traffic ticket because that's off a field
right.
issue.
Yeah.
I covered a player, two players who were arrested, and right. that's an off the field issue. They were arrested for possession of alcohol. That's not an issue.
Not an issue.
You know, so yeah. it's a really wide range thing. And then you have some really serious issues. The LSU lineman, I think I'm blanking on his name, where he wasn't drafted at all. He was supposed to be like a first round mm-hmm. pick. And he wasn't drafted because of a sexual assault allegation. So,
okay.
you know, and they're both labeled as off field issues. And they're not anywhere in the same hemisphere.
No, it's not the same thing.
So I think that's one of the issues is really when you developed this off-the-field red flag type of thing, probably about 10, 15 years ago, it's really wide-ranging and it kind of yeah. casts a scarlet letter on these players, even though
right.
what does off-the-field issue mean? And I think more so, as we mentioned here, the NFL, the teams know. They
right.
They do a really, 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 really in-depth research on all
right.
their players. They know everything. I think we're going to get to this a little later, but the Josh Allen tweets,
I saw
one person say, it's not unlikely that NFL teams already knew this. It's not really difficult to search social media.
Yeah, it's Twitter.
They
you
probably knew
back.
These
yeah.
existed. So it's... So that's it's more public perception. It's more, hey, are we going to draft this person and then bring him in? And how is the public going to perceive? Which
right.
is really an interesting thing, too, because there's just so many layers to it as I like kind of just scratch my head because it hurts. Because if you're really good, just like anything else in the world, if you're really good at what you do, you kind of get more leeway.
Right.
But how do you gauge that public perception? Of, okay, we bring in someone,
yep.
second, third round, is that okay? Fourth
right,
round?
Exactly. Like where,
it's
yeah.
really just weird because there is a scale there. I just don't know how it works. And yeah, I mean.
Well, and so this is sort of.
It's weird.
This is sort
hurts
of what
head.
I find interesting about like the, I mean, ESPN and the NFL Network are the people who air the draft and have the guys talking about it. And, It's interesting to me because it seemed like we were talking about a little earlier. Their job is to focus mainly on football because that's what the audience is there for. But as a journalist, I feel this way partially because this is a really big issue in music right now as well with a lot of young, like SoundCloud rappers and things like that, which like everyone who doesn't know what that is just turned off the podcast, but
they turned off a long time ago. It's
okay.
just you and me
Fair
talking.
Point. As journalists, do you not have sort of a responsibility to report that out a little more thoroughly than just, oh, like, well, there's an off the field issue, you know?
Yes. And I think they do. As we see in this NFL.com article, it's extremely
right. So in certain instances,
thorough.
Sure.
And I think, and for, it's so funny we're talking about sports, but it's, I would say it goes across all news. When you're on television, especially for the NFL draft,
right.
you want it's basically real life Twitter. You want to
right.
give me quick. I don't want to know like off the field. What was it?
Give me a take.
I don't want nuance.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna go on to the next player. And how does this affect my team right now? And what's gonna happen right now?
Right.
And there's no nuance involved in that. Where print and by print I mean you know online
yeah,
written.
Yeah.
There's a lot more. Space or ability or opportunity to dive into it. So I do think it would be extremely unfair to say there isn't that analysis.
Sure.
I would say in the thing that is the NFL draft, especially primetime when they're trying to get it, you know, quicker than
yeah.
They just want to wrap up their Twitter so they can go and then talk in the at the water cooler the next day and be like, so
yeah.
You know, Isaiah Wynn, he's going to be a
that,
great lineman.
That Mike Hughes guy, if he can really figure out these off-the-field issues.
Right, well, and I brought up Mike Wynn. I mean, excuse me, Mike Wynn. Isaiah Wynn, he has no off-the-field issues. The Patriots drafted
oh, is that the lineman
yeah. But I just brought him up because that will be the water
Jackson.
Cooler talk here.
Right,
like,
right.
hey, that Isaiah Wynn's going to fill right in for, you know, Vollmer, and it's going to be great and all this other stuff. And it's not Vollmer, but I'm blanking
I have
on
no
the
idea
tackle's
who
name
who
now.
The
but
Patriots offensive line is.
I'm on a Vollmer kick right now.
Yeah, that's like the third or fourth Vollmer reference.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. But, yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of this stuff is just in the sort of time period we're in right now. With
Nate Solder, that's his name. Nate's, sorry.
Wow, Vollmer Solder.
Well, they were both tackles, Lyman. But yeah.
Yeah. It's, well, let's since you already brought it up, let's sort of dive into the Josh Allen thing. Josh Allen, what was it, like a day before the draft? It came out that he...
Just about 24 hours the afternoon before.
Yeah, he had some old tweets. Apparently, they were from when he was 14 years old. Is that
they
correct?
Were... He was... Yeah, it was a while. It was a while back.
Early Twitter, Josh Allen... What were they like song? I think you know more about this than I do, so I'm gonna pass the baton over to you.
So I don't know a whole lot of that. I'm gonna try to bring it up as well because I think you're right. He apologized,
right?
And he said that they were from rap lyrics, I believe, in a TV show.
Okay. Oh, one of them was actually kind of racist.
No, they were very much.
Yeah. They were both. Like, one of them was rap lyrics, and then the other one was like a racist phrase or something.
So it was, if it ain't white, it ain't right.
Yeah, that's what it was. So the other ones were N-words from rap lyrics. And then,
I haven't confirmed whether they're from rap lyrics. All I know that he used the N-word a number of times.
Okay.
And it looks like here, three tweets. He said they were from rap lyrics. I haven't seen anyone say they weren't. And then the other one he said from a TV show was, if it ain't white, it ain't right. And these were from ranging from 2012 to 2013.
Okay. Yeah. So that it's just, more.
I think, yeah. And what we wanted to get in here was not so much, I mean, the tweets are not
just airing out Josh Allen
and they're not, acceptable on any account of anyone's imagination. Just absurd. But I saw Mike Freeman from Bleacher Report. I saw an interview with him, with Rich Eisen, before the draft. And he said what he doesn't like, as he denounced the tweets in all shape and form. But what's bad about this was the information was leaked to affect his draft stock. It wasn't like someone was coming and saying, hey, this person, this dude is maybe a racist. You know, this isn't kind of a public information newsworthiness. This was specifically to drop his draft stock. For whatever reason, to hurt him or whatever.
Right,
Some people said that could it possibly be another a team or a scout doing this to make him drop? And then someone else said, which is a really fair point, that makes no sense whatsoever in terms of another team's going to change their view of someone because of what another team release, regardless of whatever. And it reminded me very much of when I was in Mississippi, Laramie Tunzel, an offensive lineman for Ole Miss. This was, I think, hours before the draft.
It was, yeah. It was like 3 hours before
the draft. Yeah, if that. And it was released of a video of him with a gas mask on, smoking a bong. And it really, I think, put teams in just... I remember teams from the people I spoke with was just... It wasn't so much the video, it was what's going to happen next. Because he was kind of had some NCAA investigation for paying and
getting paid, and he had to come out and make a statement 3 hours before the draft.
And then his stepdad sued some. It was this. So for teams, it was what's going to happen next. It's not even this video.
Right, right.
But it's, and again, that's a situation where it's just absurd because he's dreaming about this night forever, and then to someone to do this at that exact point. Not, again, not for the public knowledge, not for, hey, this is newsworthy, specifically to degrade someone's experience. That just doesn't seem right.
Well, in a bit, and not to bring it back to, I feel like we always bring it back to social media, which once again, our plan to just turn this into a social media podcast is coming to fruition, but... I think that was an example of, that was sort of the first time social media had impacted not a big event, but we had never seen the NFL draft impacted by social media before, I don't really think.
No, outside influences, outside things influenced the draft because it was something where he was supposed to go top three.
Yeah.
And then he went in the teens, I believe, if my memory serves
Dolphins,
me correctly.
Maybe, something like that.
So it was... It was a pretty crazy night because it was interesting because there was this live real time arc where people were like, "Oh my God, he's gonna drop!" And yeah, he should drop. What an idiot, you know? And then it reaches
the peak, and it's like he's dropping.
And then people are like, "Oh, okay, this kind of sucks that it's happening on his night." And then within hours, it was like, okay, yeah, he should probably get drafted. I feel bad now for this. And it was playing out on social media because people were like, ha, 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 he's dropping. And then he deserves it. What an idiot. How did he do it? And then the same people would then come in and be like, all right, now, okay, this is not funny anymore. He's a really good player. I hope my team gets him. You know,
And then the Ravens start getting close and they're like, oh, man, what a steal Laramie Tunsil would be.
Which then kind of goes into that aspect of, you know, do fans really care, or is it, well, he's our idiot, or he's our off the field issue, where that's that, oh, what an idiot Laramie Tunsil is, and then, oh, but I want him on my team because it's a great value. It's just one of those things.
And once again, it's one of those things where it seems like NFL teams have a line where it's like, if the player is at least this good, it doesn't, because you look at somebody like Ben Roethlisberger or Jameis Winston who have these sexual assault allegations, I believe coming in, maybe Roethlisberger's was after he got into the league.
I believe it was after, yes.
But Jameis Winston was immediately prior pretty much to him getting in the league. There was a massive New York Times investigation into it, and it didn't affect his draft stock one bit. But Laramie Tunsil, who's not a franchise quarterback, gets a video posted of him smoking weed, which once again we bring up the stigma centered around drug-related off-the-field issues, and he drops pretty dramatically for who was going to be a top-three pick.
It's a business like anything else. I think a lot of times people forget how much of a business it literally is. And
it's really important to remember that.
They're, you know, corporations. Each team is a corporation or an entity, so to speak, and they have to value what is this person going to do for my brand? You know, what is it going to do for my company? And when you look at a quarterback or any of that skilled position, their leash is going to be a little longer in terms of what
you need. It's the face
what they can
of your
get away with. Yeah. They can win. You know, they can, they're directly going to lead to wins. They are the people that talk after the game. Now that has both positives and negatives in terms of, okay, you have to be able to conduct yourself because you're a leader.
Right.
But at the same time, Johnny Manziel was drafted in the first round, which brings a lot of off-the-field baggage from, I think, domestic violence. Domestic violence to drinking. So there's a whole lot of that swirling around, and he was still drafted in the first round and didn't work out. But these teams, they have to balance that. Okay, you know what? But the boom bust, so to speak. This could go down a terrible road, but it could also go down a great road. Not saying that's good, bad, or indifferent, but for an offensive lineman,
it's a little different.
He could play amazingly great, but is that really going to?
How much is that going to help the fan?
The advertisement. How many jerseys are the offensive lineman going to sell? And that's very much the business, just like anything else.
And I think that's, I always sort of come back to that point when I watch the draft, because it is, you just, it's so, for people who pay attention to the league as a whole and how it operates, it's so blatantly obvious that everything is.
And I want to be clear, I'm not saying that's right, that someone should overlook because they're going to sell a lot of jerseys. That to me, that's a huge problem. That you should be, there should be a standard regardless. And if you can't get someone who is a good role model, then maybe you need to, you know, look elsewhere. But that's just unfortunately the way it is in the NFL that's the way that it is.
Well, and then additionally from a fan perspective as well, how do you interact with that person now that he's on? I mean, a really good example is I am a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs. I think we all know. I maybe have talked about it on the pod before, but I was listening to GM Street with Mike Lombardi this morning, and they were talking about some of the guys in the draft who either fell or didn't fall in the face of off-the-field issues. And one person he brought up as a glaring example of this is Tyreek Hill for the Kansas City Chiefs, who had some pretty – he had domestic violence, I believe, charges against – we'll say domestic violence charges, because I don't remember the specifics of the case off the top of my head, but you bring a player like that in, and it's often, like I brought up earlier with music, XXXTentacion is the number, he had a number one album 2 weeks ago, and he has these horrific sort of charges pending against him right now in Florida courts. And it's, as a fan of both of these people who I talked about specifically, but then of anybody else who your team or a musician you feel closely with, when they have these problems, how do you interact with them, and what's the line? I think that's something I've been thinking about a lot this year, just because there's been a lot of instances of it, from anywhere from Louis C.K. to sports with someone like Tyreek Hill, to music with artists like 6ix9ine or XXXTentacion or even R. Kelly right now. It's just, well, R. Kelly for the last 25 years, but it's just something people are having to cope with now more so than ever, because people are talking about it. It's sort of the issue of the moment with the Me Too movement and things like that.
Yeah, and it's something that I think Chris Long, a former Patriot, Eagles player.
We should end on Chris Long. We should talk about Chris Long as the
last. I found it interesting when he, after Kanye went on his political or entered the political realm.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people were calling, well, I may boycott Kanye and this and that.
Yeah.
And Chris Long said, no more power to you, but just, you got to remember, be consistent in the sense of, are you boycotting so-and-so? Because, you may disagree with Kanye, and that's fine, but do you know who else? Are you not going to go see, any movie that somebody that you disagree with has, or any? And he's basically just calling out the hypocrisy of what we kind of talk about, not to go back to social media, but the Twitter retweet of, I'll just unfollow him. And it's like,
you didn't do anything.
Right. But he provided, his opinion in front of you, and that's great. And, stand for something, but remember to stand for something across the board. Cause I believe, I don't know how it came up, whether someone said Chris Long should boycott his music or whatever, but I thought it was an interesting, valid point that there are a lot of entertainers or things that we watch or entertain or anything like that, where are you aware of, what this means? If, for example, I think what he was saying was, if you were a Patriots fan and were saying, I'm going to boycott Kanye West because he supports Trump, he would say, do you know that the quarterback of the New England Patriots had
the owner, the quarterback.
There's, just keep that in mind, and continue your boycott, keep your freedom of speech, do whatever you want, but also keep that in mind that there are a lot of entertainers. And I think that's, to kind of wrap it all up in a circle, is very much what NFL franchises do with when you're looking at off-the-field issues.
They certainly are consistent about that.
you have to
to an extent, though. Sometimes they're not. There are people who, there are definite, like you talked about, that Josh Gordon, the Browns are keeping a very, very close eye on him because they're concerned about his marijuana use, but at the same time, they draft Johnny Manziel with not really any
that's what I meant. They're very much like, pick and choose their
So you're saying
rationale.
They need more consistency rather than, that's a little bit, but I think it's a mixed bag.
That's what if I came off incoherent, which I probably did, that's what it seemed like. Yeah. The NFL is very much a mixed bag of, they judge every situation on its own rather than
operating with consistency.
Hey, I disagree with the A. Right. So all of anyone who believes
B
A is
through Z is now this under the same umbrella.
Sure, and I think as you mentioned, the NFL just kind of
they pick and choose based on often a bottom line. I think, like most businesses do, I guess. Which, I mean, if you're trying to make a dollar, that makes sense to me. If you want to, I mean, we live in a capitalist society. You got to make your bucks, I guess.
It's really interesting in terms of it's a business, and it's very much a private business, but very much viewed through a public scope. And whether
that's a good point,
it's
that's
hiring practices.
Point. Yeah.
It's salaries, even though it's private. It's
right. Well, and we didn't even talk
injuries,
about
injuries, health of its employers.
And the other thing, which has nothing to do with the draft, but we didn't even talk about the backlash they're dealing with now with all of the cheerleaders throughout the league.
Mm-hmm.
That's another story for probably another podcast, but it is interesting to see. I think as a whole, these bigger businesses are being held more accountable for their actions, specifically when it deals with things like that, when it's a blatant decision made based on gender or sex or things like that. I mean, it is just, we've seen it. I mean, it goes back to someone like Josh Gordon, Martavis Bryant, all the way to Michael Sam, to you name it. There's been any number of things that are strange with the draft or the NFL, but I guess that's one consistency about the NFL. Things are always going to be kind of weird.
And I think that's probably the world.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It's a microcosm of a larger macro.
Microcosm of a larger macro. You heard it here first. This has been The Bubble. He is Mike Bonner. I am Montana Samuels. Mike flexed his superior intellect on me with that last comment, so I'm going to leave it at that before I make myself look like more of an idiot, and we hope you will have us back. Have us back. Have us back.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.